All right, Joey Massio, improve any relationship. Okay, put that in there. Awesome, put this here. Here we go. Raise your hand if you heard me speak this morning. All right, awesome. Yeah, that's true. We all heard you, Joey. All right, raise your hand if you heard me speak last year. Raise your hand if you heard me speak at LDSHE. I spoke, those are awesome. Raise your hand if you've never heard me speak before, have no idea who I am. Oh, quite a few. Oh, welcome, welcome. Well, I am Joey Massio. A little bit about myself. You guys already saw this, these slides, but this is improve any relationship, winning the game of disagreements. All right, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to help you out so much in your life. So I run Sidekick to Hero, which is a virtual curriculum where there's short, funny videos that I make that teach you awesome stuff like what I've been teaching today. And there's prizes and gift cards and things and virtual hangouts and all that. But we're doing baking cookies with coaches in February. So you join a live stream, you all bake cookies together at the same time. It's a lot of fun. And then somebody wins a $25 Amazon gift card. A lot of fun. I teach seventh grade at American Heritage in Utah, which is a lot of fun. I've been a seventh grade teacher for 8 years now. I own an escape room business with my dad in Orem, and I do improv comedy. This over here is the comedy sports in Provo. So I've been doing improv comedy for over 25 years, which means one thing, I'm old. Also, I was a Disneyland comedian and performer for 9 years, all throughout college, which was a lot of fun. I'm the only actor in Disney history to have played which two characters? Who remembers?
Mad Hatter and Darth
Maul. Darth Maul and the Mad Hatter. I'm incredibly versatile. That's right. Both of those are me. All right. It took 90 minutes to get into makeup and 45 minutes to get all the makeup off. That was a lot of fun. This was also fun. Both of these, fun. One night, though, I was asked to be one of the hitchhiking ghosts from the Haunted Mansion, and you saw it this morning. Don't give it away. All right? One of these is me. If you have not seen this picture before, what's your guess?
The one
with the beard. Everybody's voting on this one? All right, that's correct. Good job. The last group, they're like, the middle one, the left one, the one on top. There's no one on top. Oh, yes, yes. So that's me. That's back when I had hair. It's good days. Good days. All right. I want to talk about my parents. All right. So I was born to some parents, right? As we all were, right? Right? Samesies. And so when all throughout my childhood, my parents fought a lot. Like, they would argue all the time. There was a lot of arguing. And then it was funny because then they'd go into the room and close the door and yell at each other and think we couldn't hear. It was like, yes, Mom and Dad, the walls are soundproof. No, but we could always hear, and they'd always yell at each other. And they were really good at fighting. Right? They were, like, super good. Like, my mom was really good at remembering everything my dad did wrong and bringing it up. Well, 17 years ago, you left the toilet seat up. And you always bring that up, right? And then my dad was really good at being like, oh, well, you never listen to what I'm saying. I'm just do the thing I'm telling you to. And they'd always fight and fight and fight. Until when I was 11, they sat us all down and said, hey, we're getting divorced. And we were like, oh, no, our family's broken. This is the worst. No, you know, and then they got separated and they got divorced. And we were like, oh, I'm going to be one of those families now where it's like, it's the divorce split family. And my dad moved into like this apartment complex, which is weird. And then we'd go visit him. And then we'd have to sleep in the living room because it was like a studio apartment or a one-bedroom apartment. So it was like, oh, that was super awkward. So we did that for 2 years. And they still talked to each other. And then one day they sat us down and they said, guys, guess what? We're going to get married again. And we were like, yes! Oh, prayers are answered. Dreams do come true. This is great. And it was great. They got remarried. We were all there, right? We got pictures of us at their wedding. This is wedding number two. And we're like, oh, it's great. And I'm like, yeah. And then promptly, they started arguing and fighting again. A lot. And then a year and a half later, they sat us all down. This is a true story. And they said, guys, we're getting divorced. And we were like, good, you guys suck together. This is miserable for all parties involved. Please stop this madness. My dad moved into a different apartment complex. We're like, yeah, we'll go visit your dad. That's fine. I was 13. No, yeah, I was like 13. 14 at this time. But yeah, this is fine. You know, this is good. We'll make it work. right? And we did that until I was a senior in high school. And a senior in high school, this is real, they sat us down.
Oh my God.
And said, hey, guess what? We're getting remarried again. And I was like, yeah, whatever you want to do. That's fine. Like, whatever. And so we went to Vegas, and they did one of those drive-through wedding things. We were in the limo, and me and my brothers was making fun of that. This is wedding number three. And the limo driver got mad at us for, like, this is a wedding. We're like, this is their third one, okay? And so it's like, I'm happy, sure, it's great, you know, but we just kind of joked about it. And then they stayed married. They stayed married until my mom passed away a couple years ago. And they ended on relatively good terms, but they still fought, and they fought quite often. I don't know how often your parents fight, but my parents probably fought more. In fact, they were my first coaching clients. They were the first ones to bring me up and go, well, Joey, Dad is doing this. And then, or they'd call me, like after I moved out and I was in college, they'd call me and I'd come over. I'm like, all right, Dad, go to the garage. Mom, go to your room. Mom. I'll talk to you next. And then I'd go. And that's where I started becoming a coach. And then later on, I got my certification in coaching. I got my master's in education and how the brain works and all that fun stuff. But I learned so much about relationships watching my parents, mostly on what not to do. And I'm going to take that knowledge and also what I learned about relationships just on the positive side of things, and that's what this session is about. I'm super excited for it because I believe that it takes one person to make any relationship awesome. And I'm living proof of this, and I'll tell you how. All right, so let's start here, right? Because most fights or relationships can go bad when there's disagreements. Raise your hand if you can tell me, how would you define winning a disagreement? Yes?
Getting the other person to resign to your side.
That's great. Love it. In fact, that's what I got. Getting the other person to change. Change the way they think, right? And we're gonna go until they go, all right, you're right, you're right. You're like, that's right, I'm right. And you write that down that I'm right. Write it on the right side of the page. You write that. Anyway, all right, so that's what we think it is, right? But that's wrong. That is wrong. I don't say very many things are wrong. I'm telling you, this is wrong. That is not how you win a disagreement. People are like, yeah, it is. That's it. You know, like if I get my mom and say, fine, you can have a phone or you can play Minecraft for 10 hours or whatever, then I've won. I've won, Joey. That's it, right? No, if that is your focus, you are not going to improve that relationship at all. All right? So now, a bonus tip. We don't need the other person to change in order to get what we want. And I teach about this a lot, and right now, the quick, like, 30-second version, because you're like, but I want to play Minecraft for 10 hours, Joey, and if they don't say yes, then I can't play Minecraft for 10 hours, right? And so, okay, what you want is you want to have fun or relax. And if mom says, no, you can't play Minecraft, you can still find a way to have fun. And relax. You can still find that way. You don't need them to change. Now, again, as kids, you're like, I don't know about, come talk to me about that. I can coach you at my booth. Okay? Here's my definition. Write this down. Okay? Winning a disagreement is acting within our values during the disagreement. That is how you win. By acting within your values. Okay? So, which essentially means not doing something that later you have to apologize for. And go, oh, I'm so sorry that I yelled, or I punched a wall, or I kicked our gerbil, or German, whatever. That was from the pre-show, you guys missed. Because if during an argument, you call names, you push, you shove, you steal things, and they go, fine, you're right, and you go, good. You didn't win. I guarantee you did not win. even if they were like, no, I see what you're saying now, but you just severed a bit of that relationship. You just killed it just a little bit, right? That is not winning a disagreement. But having a disagreement, and in the end, they're like, you know what, I don't agree with you. And you're like, hey, that's fine. You know, and you can shake hands, walk away, and you acted as the person you can be proud of. That is winning the disagreement. And you're like, no, but they don't see my side anymore. Yeah, they may never. That's not your job. Your job is not to go around trying to get people to see your side. All right? That is not a good way to live life. This right here is how you win disagreements. My parents were never, never trying to do this. All right? They were always trying to get the other person to change, even when it was something small and stupid. I remember one time they argued the whole way to my grandma's house, like a 20-minute drive. Because at the very beginning of the drive, my dad's driving, and he turns right. And my mom goes, oh, no, you should take Brea Boulevard down. And no, I'm going to take State College. There's less left turns. And, you know, and she's like, well, no, but there's more lights. And they argued for 20 minutes about something that would have saved maybe 2 minutes if one of them was right. Right? They argued the whole time because they just wanted the other person to go, oh, no, you're right. Good, that's right, I'm right. Write that down. No. So, but this is what our focus is on. If your focus is on this, make sure no parents are here. No parents who are here. Shh, okay. You will get more of what you want. I know. You will. Trust me, as a parent, as a teacher, you will get more of what you want if this is your goal. Okay. Now, I want to introduce you to a concept called the anger ladder. All right, so the anger ladder is something I noticed with my parents. All right, at the bottom is the disagreement, and there's low anger. Nobody's angry. We're just, hey, you should take this way, or hey, you should do this. In fact, this is the first time I noticed myself becoming like my parents is when I was in college and had a roommate, and we had a Friday night free, and we're like, hey, let's make jalapeno poppers, because we just wanted to. So we went, we got jalapenos, and we started cutting them up. You put cream cheese in it, you wrap it in bacon. It's the best thing to do, right? And so we're scraping the seeds out of the jalapenos, and my buddy Mark, he has a different way of getting them out. And I'm like, dude, my way's better. And he's like, no, if you do it that way, then you're good. And I forget what our arguments were. But we literally started to climb the anger ladder. And I was like, dude. And I was getting angry. He was getting angry at me. We were getting angry at each other. And I looked at his face and I saw my mom or my dad or one of them. And I'm like, I'm one. He's the other. Oh, what? I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. I don't care how I want to try your way, actually. And he was like, oh, man, you're right. You know, I want to try your way. And we laughed about it. We moved on. We ate delicious bacon-wrapped jalapenos without fighting, without continuing the argument, because I recognized that we were climbing the anger ladder. So at the bottom, no anger is just a disagreement. I think one way, you think the other. But as you start getting more angry, you start climbing the anger ladder, and you do this together, right? You start climbing it. And then in the middle, you get to a heated debate, right? And you're like, well, no, that's the stupidest way to do jalapeno pie. Only morons do it that way. You know, I'm kind of kidding, but I'm kind of not, right? You know, it's like, oh, it's a heated debate. But then you start climbing more and you get to the very top, and that's a full-fledged fight. In your head, raise your hand. So don't do it actually, but raise your hand in your head and go, yeah, I've been in a full-fledged fight before, right? With mom, dad, sibling, whatever, friend, right? You're like, we all have. We all should be raising our head hands, our hands in our heads. It's a weird visual. Okay. But yes, that's the anger ladder. Now, look at this. When there's two people involved, there's ladders lean up against each other, and we climb it together by mirroring each other. I watch my parents do this all the time, right? My mom would say something, right, that was slightly more upset about what my dad said. I'm just a little annoyed that you're doing that. My dad would be annoyed that she was annoyed. So then he'd climb one rung higher, and then they just build on top of each other until they got to the very, very top of the ladder. And at the top of the ladder is the highest probability of acting outside of our values. That's when you're gonna yell. That's when you're gonna call names. That's when your parents, when they're mad, they're gonna give you a punishment that they never will fulfill. You ever had that? You're grounded for a month! And you're like, yeah, that's not happening. Right? And your parents, you know what they're also thinking? dang it, that's not happening. Right? And then they want to give you time off for good behavior so they can get out of that binding contract they just said when they were mad, right? They never want to be a parent that will ground you for a month. That's outside of their values, but it came out. Oh, no. And then they have to honor it in a way, right? And so mirroring emotions is when I'm mad that you're mad, right? I'm annoyed that you're, I'm frustrated that you're frustrated. And we start mirroring them. And then we start climbing together. That's the fastest way to climb the anger ladder. But this is what I noticed. And my parents never did that. I didn't notice it because my parents did it. I noticed it because they never did it. That if one person stays here, right? Let's say this one's staying down here. And this person goes, oh, yeah? They never go, oh, yeah? Oh, well, I'm just staying calm down. Oh, yeah? Well, I'm still staying calm down here. I see where you're. Oh, yeah? That never happens, okay? Now, if it does happen, some of you guys are like, no, my brother would do that. Right? Cool. If that happens, they will slide down faster if you stay down here. It takes one person. And most often, that person, when they come back down, they'll thank you for keeping your head and for staying cool. I do this with my wife all the time. Right? She'll get a little sad or angry or whatever, and I'll just stay down here. And she'll get mad at me. Not at me, usually at the kids or something like that, right? She's like, why aren't you mad like I am? Right? I'm like, hey, I care about what you care about, but I'm just not, you know, and then, she'll come back and go, oh, thank you for keeping your head, right? For staying, you know, grounded. Which is funny, because at the bottom of the anger ladder, you are grounded. Not grounded, like you lost your stuff, but grounded as in like electricity. Anyways. All right, so how do we win the game of disagreeing? Well, by acting within our values, right? Well, how do we do that? There's two steps to it, and I'm going to cover both in this lesson. 15 minutes on each. Develop a true relation or understanding of relationships and raise our emotional intelligence. Those two things are what it takes. So a true understanding of relationships and raise our emotional intelligence. All right, so for those who are taking notes, these would be two things you would write down quickly because I'm moving on. Or just take a picture. Smart. All right, so, and I'll come back to this slide in a bit, but develop a true understanding of relationships. Here you go. Here is the most common metaphor for relationships out there in the world today. They say this, a relationship is like a plant that two people take care of together. Right? And it could be any two people, siblings, mom, dad, boss, employee, friends, it doesn't matter, BFFs, right? But, and so this just happens to be a guy and a girl, right? All right? And if both people show up and they start doing their part in their relationship, you know, metaphorically watering it and trimming it and dunging it and whatever, right? Doing all this, then the plant of the relationship plant will produce delicious tasting fruit. And it'd be like, I love having you around. You know what? I love having you around. This relationship is delicious, right? And it's great, right? But if one person stops showing up and doing the work, then the other person has to do all the work. They have to, I like them or I love them, depending on the relationship, so I'll do the work and I'll take care of it myself. And then the other person can just, like, waltz up whenever they want. Hey, thanks for managing this relationship. Thank you. Right? And then you're like, it's okay. I love you. And I'll do the work. Until eventually you get sick of it and then you explode on them. And go, I'm doing everything. And they're like, what are you talking about? Right? Or to make matters worse in this metaphor, the person is there, but they are not doing any work. In fact, maybe they're actively poisoning, right, it with some of the things they're doing or some of the things they're saying. And you're like, oh, I'm stuck in this relationship with this toxic person, right, who's actually making the fruit bitter and disgusting and rotten. And now whenever I'm around them, it's like, this is what I think about you. It's disgusting. Right? Oh, you're so toxic. And then that person goes, oh my goodness, so I dated this guy. He was so toxic. And they're like, oh my goodness, I hate people like that. Me too. On the other hand, the guy is like, oh my goodness, I dated this girl. She was so toxic. I'm like, dude, bro, I hate guys and girls like that. Yeah, me too. Right? And they're both telling the story about toxicity. It's like, who was really toxic? What was going on here? Right? But hey, you know what? If you just happen to have a person who is going to poison or not do the work, you're kind of stuck. And that's just kind of how relationships are. Good luck out there. Okay, this is not an accurate metaphor for relationships. It's a lie. But it's talked about in movies, television shows, songs, right, whatever. It's all about how, you know, the relationship is like a plant that two people are taking. They don't always sing about plants, but you know, they're always kind of talking about that, right? Where it's like, oh man, it was a Bun's relationship because of her or because of him or my mom, oh, right? But that's not true. It's not true at all right? And so a relationship is not like one plant. Here is the real relationship metaphor. You ready for this? A relationship is actually two plants. Let me explain. All right. So in this relationship, bringing back my guy and my girl here, all right, he has a plant that represents his perspective or his view, his experience of his relationship with her. And she has one that represents her relationship with him. These plants live inside our heads, okay? All right, stick with me. I know, it's a metaphor, but stick with me, okay? And so if they both show up and do the work and their own thought process and their own perspective of the other person, then the plant in their head produces delicious fruit that they go, oh, I love being around that person. I love, what a great best friend. What a great teacher. I know they got their flaws, but you know what? What a great teacher anyways, right? Or whatever, right? Great boss, right? It was just fantastic. Now, if one of them decides to poison the plant with negative thinking, with perspectives that are kind of toxic or damaging, then she's going to be over there being like, oh, I hate the way he chews his food. Oh, I just suck. Oh, and it's all just so bitter, right? All the while he's over here just having a bowl of cereal being like, I love life. You know, she's awesome. Oh, he just doesn't care about other people. Look at him chewing with his mouth open, right? And we do this with our brothers and sisters, right? And we do that, and we sit there, and it's all in our heads, all right? They're separate plants, separate experiences that we have. And this is true for any two people, all right? Like I said, parent-child, student-teacher, co-workers, boss, employee, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But here's the thing. The other person cannot come into our brain and poison our plant of them. Because it's in our heads. They can't go in there. Right? But we can poison it for them. We can see what they do and go, oh my goodness, and show no understanding, no love, no compassion, and go, you know, I'm going to poison this just a little bit. And here's the thing. We have to eat the plant. Or sorry, the fruit, the plant. Don't eat the plant. That's not the edible part. We have to eat the fruit the plant produces. We have to. We don't get a choice. And we all, and I know this is right, because we all know people who are delicious fruit people. Meaning they walk around and they just love everybody. They just get along with everybody. And we're like, I don't know how she does it. She's just so nice. Maybe you see them at church, co-op or whatever. They're just so, and they're walking around because we have plants for every single person in our life. We have thousands and thousands of plants in our head, right? And some people, because it's like a brain atrium, a little greenhouse, right? Some people's greenhouses are full of plants that produce delicious fruit because they do the work to take care of the thoughts of other people. And they're like, yeah, it's great. And then we all know people who are the opposite, who their brain atrium is full of plants that are producing bitter, disgusting, tasteless fruit. And they walk around like Ebenezer Scrooge, just not liking people. Oh my goodness, oh, can you believe it? They're, oh, you know. And these are the negative people, right? That we always, oh, they're negative or they're toxic. But if done right, they're only toxic to themselves, not to you. If done right. Now, so, what are relationships made out of? This is a thought question. There's no really one right answer, right? But if you had to answer, what would you say a relationship is made out of? Plants, thank you, exactly. This is a botany. No, not plants, you smart Alec. That's a good one, though. Yes? Trust, ooh, I like that, trust. Right, relationships made out of trust. Where does trust come from?
I don't know.
You said what? What?
What?
Where does trust come from?
It's just like if people just like feel, if they like nice to you and stuff.
It feels like if they're nice to you, is that? Okay, so their actions build trust in my head, right? Yeah, that's typically the way it works. Yes. Being reliable is trust. So again, more actions, right? Yes, more actions. Yeah. Love, ooh, another feel. So let's start separating these things, right? We have love and trust, which are feelings. And then we have actions, right? Reliability, they're taking certain actions, yes. Honesty, ooh, that's more of an action thing, right? If I tell the truth, then it's like, oh, yeah, that's true. Thank you. You know, and then they kind of recognize that. Yeah, all right. So I taught this before, earlier today. For those who weren't here, this is called the self-coaching model. I call it the hero formula because it's how you become the hero of your own life. But it's based on cognitive behavioral techniques, which essentially says that there are circumstances in our lives, right? As far as relationship goes, these are things that other people do and say, okay? And what other people do and say trigger thoughts that we have. And the thoughts that we have is where our feelings come from, like trust, love, hope, right? All that. And the feelings drive our actions, and our actions give us our results, right? So if I had to rephrase the question and go, which step up here do relationships really live? Like, where are relationships made? What would be your answer? Getting philosophical, I know. Yes. Ooh, actions, right? We've said a lot of that. Is actions. Either actions from us or actions from them, right? And that kind of, yeah, that's two parts there. What would you say? Results. Results, right? Hey, the results that I get. You know, the result was, well, I pushed my little brother over. That was the result, right? Whatever, right? Yes. Thoughts, right? That is my answer. My answer is relationships primarily live in the thought world. And I know it gets like, what? We're in the Matrix? No. So let me explain, okay? Because a lot of people say, well, it's actions, Joey. Actions of the other people affect my thoughts. But we're in control of our thoughts. So if somebody lies to me, going about honesty, right, or trust, somebody lies to me. They said, no, Joey, you don't have a booger coming out of your nose, right? And then I talk to five different people and then check the mirror and go, oh, I do have a booger coming out of my nose. What? And I go back and they're like, gotcha, right? You know, I have a choice. I have so many choices here. I can go, well, they're not reliable. They're not trustworthy. And I can think all the thoughts I want. And you're free to choose whatever thought you want, but that's going to affect my feelings around them. So if I go, what a dirty little liar, I should never trust them again. Right now, I'm going to feel anger and a lot of things. I poison the plant a little bit, right? And then my actions, right, towards them is going to be different, which might cause them to mirror me, right? And now I start not improving the relationship. Now, some people are like, well, you can't just trust them though, Joey. True. I can go, you know what? That person likes to make jokes. I should be aware of that next time. Right? And it's okay to want to make jokes or what can I want to. And that makes me feel entirely different around them. I'm still cautious. I'm still aware. Hey, do you have a booger? No, you don't. I remember what you said last time. Hold on. I totally did. Right? I, you know, right? That's different. Rather than me going, what a big liar. You're the worst, right? That affects everything, yeah? Take their words with a grain of salt. Yeah. What feeling or what? Yeah. What feelings allows me to take their words with a grain of salt?
Understanding and probably that they get the benefit of the doubt. They probably weren't trying to harm
me.
They probably were just trying to make a joke.
Yeah. They didn't want to harm me, right? Yeah. Look at that. A lot of different ways of looking at it. All right. So there are three thoughts specifically that make up relationships. Three thoughts specifically. It's what you think about them, what you think about you, and what you think they think about you, right? And I love that we have another laser pointer. Here, meet me up over here, green laser pointer. Meet me. Let's play tag as people write this down. Woo, over here. Oh, I'm over here. No, I'm over here. Good. Now put it away and don't take it out again. Thank you. Okay, so what you think about them, what you think about you, and what you think they think about you. Let's go over these. Me and my wife have the best relationship ever. Ever. I don't care if your parents are like, no, we're the most in love. No, me and my wife are. We win. Okay? This is why. I think she's amazing. That one's obvious, right? I think I'm the best husband in the world, right? And I'm going to work like the best husband in the world. And I think she thinks that I'm amazing. That's a great relationship with a plant that is delicious in my own head about my relationship with my wife. But notice if I change one of these. Notice if I go, she's not the best. I married down. Right? She can use some work. But I'm still thinking, I'm the best husband, and she thinks I'm the best husband. That changes the relationship a lot, doesn't it? But now, what if I just change the second one? What if I go, she's the best wife in the world, but me, man, I don't know why she married me. It was a pity, Mary, or something, you know, like, ah, oh, I'm just so flawed, I'm so stupid, I'm whatever, right? But I still think that she thinks I'm amazing. How does that change the relationship? Differently, in a different way, right? But now let's change the last one. I think I'm amazing. I think she's amazing, but I don't think she thinks I'm amazing. Now I'm trying to always prove myself to her and trying to get her to do things, right? Just changing one of these thoughts changes so much. And this is the same for your brothers, your friends, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whoever, right? It's the same. If your relationship is not where you want it to be, it's probably because one of these three thoughts, or maybe all three of them, are poisoning your plant that you have of them, your experience. And if you want to improve the relationship, you just change your thought that, my mom doesn't understand me, to, you know what, maybe my mom just wants what's best for me. She loves me. I know she loves me, right? Rather than thinking, I'm just a rebellious daughter, right? I guess I can never do anything right. I go, you know what? This is typical teenage stuff, and I'm figuring it out. Right? Or rather than thinking, my mom thinks I'm so disobedient, or I'm just like so stupid, or whatever you might think, right? You know, my mom knows that I love her, right? My mom knows I'm trying a lot. Those right there changes your relationship so much, and that stops you from climbing the anger ladder. All right, that was 16 minutes. Okay, so, all right. Going on, so that was part one, develop a true understanding of relationships. Check, all right, we're going to have that. Afterwards, I'll stay here in here to answer any questions, especially questions that are like, well, Joey, what about my specific circumstance? All right, those are the best questions, rather than, what about Hitler? That's where teens always go. I'm like, do you know Hitler personally? Are you trying to improve your relationship with Hitler right now? Like, what's going on? And they go, no, but it's like, what about him? I'm like, go read a history book. Right, I'm talking about a relationship in your life that you can actually improve. All right, next, raising our emotional intelligence. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself? Give yourself a number. If you have a notepad, write it down. Give yourself a number. No, not out loud. Just give yourself a number. What would it be? And I'll give you an example. 1 is if I watch a commercial with a sad puppy dog, I'm wrecked for days. Right, I'm just sobbing in my room, like, oh, my emotions really control me. 10 is like, I'm super in control of my emotions. I know what I'm feeling. I never lash out. I never, right, using that never word, right? So give yourself just a scale of 1 to 10, quickly in your head. All right, hopefully you have that number. All right, now, let's talk about emotional intelligence. Who said 6, 7? No, it's 6 or 7. All right, so... If you are, yes.
And yeah. They said that you were a baby, and when you were a baby, you had made no mistakes if you were 10. And that means you would die 10 no matter how many mistakes you
made. So you're always. Oh, yeah, that's probably about self-worth. Yeah, self-worth, true. This is different. This is a skill, right? Like, if I had to measure myself 1 to 10 on, if I can play soccer, right? I'm not like a 10 on soccer, right? You know what I'm saying? But yeah, self-worth, 100%. You're 10, always will be a 10. This is a different measurement. We're talking about something else. But thank you for pointing that out. I don't want anybody leaving being like, Joey says I wasn't a 10 on self-worth. No, you all are 10s, 10 out of 10. Some of you are 11. I'm just kidding, you're all 11. Okay, so, question: what are emotions? If you have emotional intelligence, you should be able to answer these three questions simply. What are emotions? Where do they come from? And how do I deal with them? Let's start with number one. What are emotions? Oh, well, one person. Just one person. Raise your hand. What are emotions? Yes, right there. They are feelings. Thank you. That's the number one answer I always get. And my follow-up is, great, what are feelings? feel? Yeah, I'm going to start giving you examples. This isn't going exactly how it always goes, right? It's a cyclical definition, right? And then usually the second person, which it looks like you might be offering right now, well, emotions are chemical reactions or something, right? Was that going to be yours? A response, yeah. It's a response to what's going on. It's kind of chemical, right? The short answer is we all don't really know what emotions are or feelings are, but we know what we can label it happy, sad. It's when I react to somebody else, but like, what are they, right? You need to know the answer to that if you're going to be emotionally intelligent. Hands down, I know, we got to move on here. So this is the best definition I've ever heard, and when I first heard it, I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. I was at this big convention. A big coach who works at Google and coaches everybody at Google was presenting. There were thousands of us in the audience, and she said, "Emotions are vibrations we feel in our bodies." And I was like, "Little hippie lady over there, vibration, woo! That's not me, lady. Okay, I'm a dude. I don't feel vibrations in my body. Okay, that's weird. I don't do that, right?" But then I started studying a little bit more about emotions. All right. Emotion, the word emotion comes from the Latin word emotere. Anybody here speak Latin? Did I pronounce it right? Oh, you don't know. Yeah, of course I pronounced it right. Nobody here speaks Latin. All right, emotere, which actually means energy in motion, which is actually where the word emotion comes from, like an email stands for electronic mail. Bet you didn't know that. Right? I know. Emotion. Energy in motion. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, dang. If energy in motion isn't exactly what a vibration is, I don't know what else is. That's one point for the hippie lady. Oh! Right? And then, as far as it's... So I don't use vibrate. I use energy. It's energy that shows up in our body. And as far as in our body, I really started thinking about it. Our body and emotions. And I'm like, we only ever talk about emotions with how it affects our body. If you're about to go talk to that cute guy or cute girl and ask her to dance or something, right, at the dance last night, right, you're going to get nervous. You're going to have butterflies in your stomach, right? Or you feel so much anxiety right now, right? It's hard to breathe. It feels like an elephant is sitting on your chest. Or you're watching a movie. Oh, give me the chills on your skin, arm, right? Your hair stands on end, right? Or you're so emotional, you're all choked up, which is in your throat. Or you're so angry, it feels like my head's about to explode. Wait a minute. Second point for the hippie lady. Right? Emotions only ever show up in our body. That's how we know we're feeling something. Right? Emotions are wrongfully attributed to our heart. Heart means emotion. Your heart does not give you emotion. That's just where you feel some emotions for love or heartbreak. You feel it in your chest area. Right? And so, but that's not what it is, right? So it's energy that shows up somewhere in our bodies. And then I found this. This is the mood meter developed by the very smart people at Yale. Very anti-hippie lady, right? Yale, right? They're scholars, they're very smart. Right? They came up with this. They said emotions can be measured, right? By two measurements, energy and pleasantness. Third point for the hippie lady. Right? She called them vibrations, but really energy and motion. Right? And I was like, oh, she wins. And so Yale is saying there are high energy emotions, there are low energy emotions. Right? That makes sense. Right? I can feel stressed or surprised or festive. Hey, right? Christmas time, high energy. Or I can feel hopeless, drained, cozy, serene, right? Low energy emotions. But this word down here, write this one down. This one will change your life. This will make you at least 3 points more emotionally intelligent on that scale. I noticed what word they did not use here. They didn't use good and bad. They didn't use positive and negative emotions. They used pleasant and unpleasant. And I'm like, dang, you know, that's a really good drama-free word to use. Sometimes in life, we feel pleasant. Other times in life, we feel unpleasant. Sometimes it's high energy unpleasant, sometimes it's low energy unpleasant. Sometimes it's really unpleasant, sometimes it's just kind of unpleasant. And I changed the way I talk about emotions. I stopped going, well, I feel bad. Because feeling bad is, well, bad. You should feel bad, right? You should feel good. Good is good, bad is bad. Don't feel bad, feel good. No, I stopped that. I feel unpleasant right now. Because life is this way. I don't know if they did this on purpose, but I always taught life is 50-50. Meaning life is 50% pleasant emotions, 50% unpleasant emotions. Right? Notice they didn't make a graph where it was all yellow and green. And it was just one row of red and blue. Sometimes you, but really, mostly we should all be feeling happy. That's a lie. I'm not true. Life is 50-50. Everybody's life is 50-50. Whether you just got broken up with yesterday, or your dog just died, or whatever, if you go back to the past month, still 50-50. Past year, 50-50. Whenever somebody goes, not my life, Joey. My life is all bad, or you're all unpleasant. A lot of that, I would say 80% unpleasant. I go, well, let's count. I go over the past 24 hours, and it always ends up being 50-50. Even if something really bad happened during the day, they were feeling pleasant until that thing happened. They were feeling unpleasant for, you know, 6 hours, and then they felt pleasant again in the evening. I'm like, that's 50-50. But we just tend to focus more on the unpleasant things and then just label the whole day as bad. All right, okay, so what are emotions? What would the hippie lady say?
Vibration.
I say energy that shows up somewhere in our body. Okay, now, let's see, let's skip that for now. All right, so next question. Where do emotions come from? There's a one-word answer to this. Who knows it? Where do emotions come from? Yes. You were paying attention. Bonus point. There you go. All right, yes. Where do emotions come from? They go back, going back to this model here, right? They come from our thoughts. All right, look, it comes right before that. I had this hanging up in the middle school discipline office where I worked as a counselor. And I had this up, and there was my friend who was a science teacher. He was walking in, he saw it hanging up, he was like, Joey, that's wrong. I said, what do you mean? He said, no, feelings come first, and then thoughts. I said, what do you mean? And he was like, well, if I'm walking through a forest and I see a bear, I don't go, gee, let me think about this bear. And then I feel, no, I just feel, oh, I'm afraid, and then I think about what to do, and then I do it. I go, that's a valid point. Question, though, why are you instantly afraid of the bear? And he was like, because it's a bear. I said, okay, yeah, right, you just restated the circumstance. Why? And he says, well, it's going to hurt me. And I said, that's your thought. And he was like, oh. I was like, exactly. They happen so fast, sometimes we don't even know. I've coached teams, and they're like, I'm feeling bad today. Why? I don't know, for no reason. I just woke up feeling bad. And I'm like, unless there's something chemical going on, which is possible, but that's not what I'm talking about because I'm not a doctor, right? Unless something chemical is going on, you're thinking something that's causing this. And whenever I coach them, it always comes out. Oh, well, yesterday my friend didn't invite me to things. I was just feeling left out. Oh, so your thought is my friends are leaving me out. Yeah, yeah. Well, duh, no wonder you woke up feeling bad. You're thinking my friends are leaving me out. And that's there in the back of your head somewhere. We need to address that. We address that, and that changes the way we feel. Now, okay, I already went over all that. Viktor Frankl teaches this, not just Joey, Viktor Frankl. So for those who don't know, Viktor Frankl, short story, for Viktor, he has a very long story. He was a psychologist who taught, or who worked with people who were in bad, depressing situations, and he helped them not commit suicide. And he was very good at his job. And then World War II happened. And he was a Jew living in Austria. So if you know your history, you know what happened to him. He got put in not one, not two, but three concentration camps, right? And his wife died and his parents died. I think only him and his sister made it out alive, all right? I'm super interested in knowing how did a guy who used to work with people who were depressed handle the most depressing situation in human history? He handled it as well as anybody could. Right? He actually would organize little circle groups, and they would talk about what's going on, and he would help to make meaning out of it, and then he made it through the Holocaust, and he wrote a book that was one of the top 10 most influential books of the 1900s. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. Really, really great book. So after the Holocaust, after going through the Holocaust, he said this. Right? He said, between stimulus, which we would call our circumstances, and response, our feelings and thought, or actions, there is a space, our thoughts. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And if he can say that after the Holocaust, then you can say that dealing with your annoying little brother, right? Or with your parents, or with your best friend, or whatever, right? You can have that same kind of power. There is a space for you to choose, right? So, skipping to that, skipping to this. Okay. Oh, I love this story, but I can't tell it. Okay. Okay. So let's go in, because usually these are two lessons in one. All right. So where do emotions come from, everybody? Our thoughts. Very good. All right. Last one. How do I deal with unpleasant emotions? I'm not going to like blow smoke and say, oh, just get over it. Nope. That's not smart. Okay. If we're feeling a super high energy version of mad or super low energy of depressed, then we can't just go, gee, what am I thinking, right? We need to deal with the emotions. So what your brain wants to do, your brain wants to avoid, resist, and react, okay? Avoid, I'm not gonna talk to that cute girl. Nope, that's awkward. Resist, I'm fine, I swear, everything's fine, and we're dying on the inside, right? Or react. Right? So, don't want that either, okay? So, I don't recommend either of those things when you're feeling, like, the emotion intense. When you are feeling the emotion intense, this is what I suggest. Allow the emotion to be there. And most people go, wait, doesn't allow me? No, that's reacting. That's acting outside of your values. I don't want that. Allowing means telling yourself, it's okay to feel this. And it's okay to go feel this somewhere else. It's okay to feel this. And I'm going to process the emotion. Okay? There are 5 steps to processing emotions. Write these down, take a picture, whatever you want. But essentially, breathe. Controlled breathing is very powerful. The box breathing, look up lots of ways, ask your parents to look it up, right? Name the emotion. I'm feeling frustrated. Find it in your body, like the hippie lady said, right? Find it. Where is it? My frustration sits right behind my ears, right here on both sides, okay? Visualize it. I like to give it a color, a shape, right, a texture or something. My frustration is flaming red trapezoids right behind my ear. All right, I just feel, and when I do this with my 8-year-old as well, and it helps kind of calm us down. And then I allow it to be there. Hey, it's okay to be frustrated. Part of life, part of building a business, part of being married, part of being a sister or a brother. It's just part of life, and it's okay to feel that. All right, so now we know the 3 answers to those questions. Hopefully, your scale, wherever you measure yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, hopefully you got a couple of numbers higher now, knowing a little bit more about emotions. All right? Emotions are not a scary monster at the end of the movie. All right? You should know where they come from, why they're here, and what they want. All right, so we talked about both of those things. Just ending here, guys. I don't want you climbing the anger ladder with your relationships. It is your job to stay down. If the other person wants to climb it, you let them. Manage your emotions. Manage your thoughts about them and take care of your plant of the other person. And that will help you improve any relationship. Okay? All right. So, 3 last things. Thing number 1, I teach stuff like this in short, funny videos in Sidekick to Hero, which is my online curriculum. Hey, raise your hand if you're in Sidekick to Hero. Anybody? No? Okay. All right. Awesome. All right. So, I do buy 6. I'm doing a buy 6, get 6 months free right now. Tell your parents to go over and check it out. Also, this summer, I'm doing my 2nd annual in-person retreat. I call it the Summit of Heroes. We're going to go tubing down the Provo River. This is down in Provo. Laser tag, trampoline parks, hiking, a lot of fun outdoor activities and things like that. And then we're going to learn about unshakable confidence. So I have a flyer on my booth, or at my booth, so go grab that. And then also, I have wristbands that have my saying on it, my slogan, this is my story. I am the hero. So come get a wristband at my booth if you haven't gotten one yet, because you are the hero in your story, which means you are the only person who can change how your story ends. And hopefully today, you know how to control and change how your relationships will end. Thank you very much. I'll be here for questions or at my booth for questions. Hurry! Raffle! Oh, yes, sure.